Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, this week, continuing a discussion we started last week, and that is about the myths of estate planning. Who knew there were myths?
Oh, yeah.
We heard about Marge and Betty last week.
That's right. They set up a whole scenario of what bad estate planning should be like, right?
So we're getting good estate planning this week, and you're dispelling myths, and we're on to another real common myth, and that is that a trust is only for the rich.
Yes.
And that's a myth.
It really is. A little brief history of trusts is that back in the 90s, when the estate tax was federal estate tax was very low, $600,000. So if you had more than $600,000, the federal government wanted to tax you should you die. That was really low. So trusts began to sneak into the thought process much more. Before that time, it really was an instrument that was utilized far less, and it was utilized for individuals that had a lot of wealth in order to ensure that money would be passed generationally. And it was greatly known to put in a lot of strings, right, and play God from the dead, which is, I'm going to keep controlling you with the money. And then we got into trust babies and spoiled brats and everything else. Right. So what the old thought process through the 50s and the 60s and even through the 70s, what it did is it gave us a public perception that trusts were only for those who had money and needed to control somebody after they died. And when we got into far lower tax thresholds in the 90s, now all of a sudden they came out to play for many more people. Because even back in the mid-90s, $600,000, that was not a very high threshold. Mm-hmm. Now, it has climbed over the years. So in the past, how many years is that? 30 years almost, past 25 years. The estate tax threshold has moved from $600,000, and now it's up to $11.7 million per person. Mm-hmm. So that's a really big threshold. But don't be fooled by that number. That's going to come crashing down in a couple of years, and it's only artificially inflated for a period of time. So estate taxes have been one of the biggest reasons that trusts have come out of the woodwork and have become a more common instrument because, I mean, nowadays, specifically in the Pacific Northwest, it doesn't take much, specifically if you own a home, to now have $600,000 and $800,000, let alone add
just in the house.
Just in the house alone, mm-hmm. Let alone throw in retirement accounts and any type of savings that you've been able to do during your lifetime. So nowadays, being a millionaire is not the same thing as what being a millionaire was. I remember growing up that, boy, being a millionaire would be phenomenal, right? Mm. But now being a millionaire is probably, I don't know what the statistics are. I really haven't looked at them, but it feels like it's more common. Now, that's a better way to put it. So instead of giving numbers, I'll just say it feels, the perception is that having $1 million is not as difficult anymore as what it used to be. So in Washington state, anyone can pass away with $2.2 million. And if they have more than that, then an estate tax will start. So in a married situation, if we just talk about taxes and taxes alone, if we start with a tax perspective, if you are close to that number and you're married, well, if I die, who do I usually give things to? And men, the correct answer is always your wife. So therefore, I die because the man always dies in my stories first, right? We've been told we're going to die first. So now we're just being good husbands. So I pass away in my story. And if I have a will or if I have beneficiary designations on my assets or if I own them jointly with my spouse, one way or another, everything is getting to my wife's hands. Is that not typical for married couples? And the answer is yes. So therefore, it is the most common way to do estate planning is just make sure my spouse gets everything. But if I'm anywhere near that tax threshold, which we said 2.2 million, it's actually $2,193,000 in Washington state. So it's 2.2 as a general number. If we're close to that threshold and I give everything to my wife, now as the market usually goes, as things continue to increase in value, property values keep rising at an astronomical rate in the Pacific Northwest, it is very likely that a conservative financial individual, that money in their hands will continue to raise. And now we push them over the tax exemption and we've died and now there's an estate tax that we never had to pay. So number one, trusts are primarily used or have been in the past primarily used to ensure that a tax is not imposed because it's an unnecessary tax. Estate planning can always resolve your tax issues. Always. Now, if you've been very blessed and you have multiple millions of dollars, there may be some things that we have to talk through of how that is going to work out. But estate taxes are typically optional. And so therefore, the base place of where we start with a trust is that we always look at it as a tax issue, or at least that's one major driving force. The other thing is that I have two kids. They're 24 and 25, both girls, which means I'm just a big sucker. Okay? So how happy would I be if I work during my lifetime to give something over to my family, to bless the kingdom of God, and to leave something for my girls? No, obviously, number one, my wife, right? Because I almost blew that. No, my wife first, and then my girls. But how happy would I be if my girls experienced a marriage that did not succeed, and the son-in-law, which who probably is never going to be good enough for my daughters, neither of them married, I don't have son-in-laws yet, so maybe they will be, but they try to walk away with something that was given for the protection of my children and my grandchildren. Would that make me happy? But yet most estate plans don't accommodate, number one, for tax planning and or protection planning of family money. And so taxes are not just for the rich. They may be a great tool pending on what your values are for your family. And I don't know what those are yet, but based upon the people who come and talk with me, making sure that we don't spend unnecessary money towards taxes, that tends to be a big one. Having a way to avoid probate, that seems to be a big one. And trusts, when they're properly designed and properly funded, they can avoid probate. And also, as I talk to people, protecting their family from outside people being able to take what we are trying to pass to them also seems to be a very high value. These are just the discussions I've had with clients. And so based upon these three things, I don't want to spend taxes. I want to stay out of probate. I want to protect my family to the best way possible. Then a trust may be an appropriate mechanism for you. It might be the appropriate tool. And it doesn't mean you have a tax problem. You may still want to avoid probate and you still may want to protect your family. So it's not about taxes. That's where trusts started to gain popularity. That's the thinking, is that if I have a tax issue, I need a trust. Well, that may be true, but that's not the only reason to utilize a trust. So therefore, the myth of a will is good enough, or no, I need a trust because of a certain dollar value, that may or may not be true. But until we sit down and actually talk and discover what your values are for your family and what your goals are in estate planning, what is the vision that God has given you for your family, that may or may not be the right tool. We only have two tools. I have a will and I have a trust. Both of them could work, but I just don't know until I sit down and talk with you. So therefore, do you need a will? Do you need a trust? Well, yes. The answer is yes. But I don't know what tool until I sit down and find out what your values are. So a trust is not just for tax planning. It's not just for the rich. It might be the tool you want to accomplish your vision in estate planning.
Okay, well, that kind of leads into our next myth, and that is my kids are responsible with their money and will be responsible with what I leave them.
Oh, correct. Well, actually, no, that's not correct. I've got statistics, and I've watched a lot of people inherit money. Now, here is the thinking. Here's where some of the disconnect is, which is we make an assumption. Well, two assumptions we make. We make two assumptions. Number one, because I was not frivolous with what I received from my parents, my kids will not be frivolous with what I give them. False. Okay? Your kids are not you. As a matter of fact, you know that. You can look at your children and how they spend money, and it is different than how you spend money. You can look at their attitudes and their mentalities towards money, and they are different than how you view money. So that's false number one, which is I was responsible, so therefore my kids will be responsible. Not accurate. Number two is that, but my kids are, I'm watching how my kids manage money right now, and they're really conservative with their money. They're penny pinchers, okay? And they're not going to spend money. Well, the reason that I would push back on that thought process is, have they ever received free money? And what do they do with free money? Not what do they do with their hard-earned money that they have to go out and use blood, sweat, and tears to preserve, and they have to try to build a future for themselves with their own hard labor. We view money that we earn very differently than money that is free. And I have statistics on this. 80% of lottery winners, sometimes I always say it backwards, lottery winners, 80% of them go to bankruptcy.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And so, and many of you out there would go, oh, yeah, I believe that. Well, I've got the articles that show this stat, and many of you would believe it. Well, lottery winners received money unexpectedly, just like an inheritor. They weren't financially prepared for it, just like an inheritor. Some of those people were tight penny pinchers because they were making money just like an inheritor, and yet they raised their lifestyle, they spent money in ways that they normally would not spend their own money, and yet they didn't preserve or protect or invest and or put it into the right buckets so that they could have it in the future. They unfortunately got caught up with their emotions just like an inheritor. Let me ask you, for those of you who have lost parents, was that a fun time? Were you emotionally stable? If you look back and actually honestly answer that question. And yet that's when we're going to give money to somebody, when they're going through an emotionally difficult time, and then we're going to say, but I trust them with it. That's great. I'm not saying that every inheritor is bad or wrong. And by the way, not having money skills doesn't make you a bad person. It just means that you haven't been trained in it. Doesn't mean that you can't learn them. It just means maybe you haven't been trained in it. And so there's many reasons why I have watched inheritors act like the lottery winner, which is, I've never had somebody come back to me and say, I'm so glad I spent that money so quick. It's always the opposite, which is, dang, I wish I would have made a different investment choice. I wish I would have held off just a little bit longer before I spent that money. And so yes, I know emotionally this is a difficult part of the conversation, which is, no, my kids aren't going to do that, Paul. Okay, that's fine. I'm not going to try to convince you otherwise, but I've just watched it. I've watched many people inherit, and I've researched it statistically. And there is a greater chance that someone is not going to use an inheritance wisely and have it after a two-year period versus those that actually do use it wisely and have it for the long term. And so are there solutions to that? Yes, there are solutions to it. And so, again, we need to have a conversation, because maybe you just would say, I don't care. Okay, I can almost buy that argument, but I really can't. So we can have a conversation. What does it mean to have a plan to assist that the finances you are handing off are going to fit within the vision God gave you for your family? And I'm going to go back to that again. What is the vision God has given you? That is paramount, not your kids. What's paramount is obeying His voice. What's paramount is doing what He has told you to do. That may push against what your natural inclination or vision is of your estate plan or what the common estate plan is out in the marketplace. That's okay. We march to a different drummer. It's all right. So let's sit down and let's talk about what is your vision, what is your desire, what are the skill sets of your children. Let's make sure that we develop a plan that will last for a true legacy.
Okay, looking at the myths of estate planning this week with Paul Grant, and you are intrigued by Paul's approach to estate planning and you want to find out more, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, there's educational opportunities coming up and ways to communicate with us, so head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memoriesworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memoriesworthtelling.com.
Hi, this is Paul Grant, the host of the Legacy and Faith Show. I want to invite you to an upcoming event, The Truth About Estate Planning, A Biblical Perspective, coming up Tuesday, February 15th at 6 p.m. You can head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com, to register. It'll be a time to ask questions about estate planning, whether it's a simple question or a complex question. So head over to legacyandfaith.com and sign up for our next workshop on February 15th at 6 p.m.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
And also joined by Mark Holland this week on the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant, looking at the myths of estate planning this week. And we're on to another myth, and that is, I dealt with my parents' estate just fine.
Yeah, that almost goes back to, well, I didn't spend all of my parents' estate, so my kids won't. And again, suggesting that your kids have the same skill set or the same manner of being able to deal with potentially difficult circumstances is all the same is a myth. It's just, it's not proper. Mm. And so there's a couple things that we need to look at. Number one, is your estate exactly the same as your parents? So, or is your estate a little more complicated? So when your parents died, did they have property? Did they have investments, IRAs, life insurance? Did they own a business? Versus your estate. So do you own multiple properties? Do you own life insurance? Do you own a business? So we may not be comparing apple to apple, orange to orange, right? Is that maybe your parents' estate plan or maybe their estate was more strategic or more simplistic in nature. Maybe there was a house, a bank account, and an IRA that had a beneficiary. Well, that's a pretty straightforward estate. Even by my accounts, that's a pretty straightforward estate, right? Versus business owners. Oh, business owners, if you're out there, you got to do a estate plan. I know I'm a small business owner, and I work really hard, and I get focused on the things in my business. And sometimes I get sidetracked with what I need to be doing in my own personal life. Don't let this one escape you. You are setting yourself up that if you are called home, and nobody knows the time and the hour that we're going to be called home, at least most of us do not, then if that came unexpectedly, boy, your family could be in a world of hurt with the complications you're leaving behind. People who are in second marriages, blended families, specifically if you do not have common children, that is one of the most complicated legally complicated scenarios for an estate. If you are in a blended family, I beg of you, do estate planning. You don't have to do it with me, but do estate planning on some level. Use your voice to clearly communicate what your desires and what your wishes are. So these two categories, business owners and blended marriages, blended families, these are two of the more complicated things no matter what you do. And by the way, if you own multiple properties, you're a business owner. So if you have a rental, if you have a couple different properties, or you have a place down in Palm Springs and you have one up here, if you own property out of state, do estate planning. You may be subject to multiple probates in different jurisdictions. There is nothing easy about that. Nothing at all. So if the primary goal is to set up a smooth transition, something that I can hand off so that the person who is going to close my estate and so my family doesn't experience difficulties, then we just got to sit down and talk about it. And the experience that you may or may have not had with what your parents went through, if it's not perfectly apples to apples, then we may be having a bad comparison. And by the way, if your children are not able to deal with the same types of things that you've dealt with, we may not also be talking about apples to apples. So there may be some presumptions in that statement, which is, I did it, and so my kids can figure it out. Well, why make them figure it out? Why not give them clear marching orders? Why not give them an estate plan that is clearly laid out so that they don't have to, quote unquote, figure it out? Let's take out the figuring and let's make a very predictable, knowable estate plan so that a smooth transition, one of the highest values of all my clients is they want a smooth transition. They don't want to leave a mess. Well, let's make sure we don't leave a mess. And I know that life can get in the way. I know that it takes time. I know it takes energy. And I know it takes money. But it is time and money well spent. Let's get it done right. Let's not rest upon these presumptions, these myths that we have floating around from other places. Let's sit down and let's make sure that we get this thing done well.
Okay, another myth. If I put my kids on my account and house, then it's all going to be easy.
Oh, yes. Maybe. So there's multiple concerns. I don't want to say problems. There's multiple concerns I have with that approach. And unfortunately, it's just the poor man's way of doing estate planning. The first one is, well, they'll have access to my bank accounts. Well, so might somebody else. Let me give you an example. This is actually a true story. Of course, I'm an attorney, so I have to preface it that way. Even on a Christian radio station, this is actually a true story. So I was walking down the halls of a courtroom one day, and I stopped because this part of this conversation intrigued me, and it was the conversation between another attorney and his client. And the woman was a little bit older. She was on Social Security, and the conversation went similar to this, which is, but it was my property. And the attorney's response was that, yes, I know that, but your daughter was on your checking account. I know she was, but she was there so that she could help me if I need it. It was my money. Yes, I know that, but you put her on your bank account. So what had happened? The daughter was not stealing from mom. So number one, there is a risk that putting one of your children on an account, that there could be nefarious things that happen. That does happen, by the way. Okay. If you're being manipulated into that decision, please try to resist that. I know it's hard sometimes, but there are. Even our children sometimes show their bad side. So this child was not being a bad daughter. She was not taking from mom. But this child, unfortunately, got into some financial problems of her own, and she was sued. And so because she was on mom's account and it was under and she had access to mom's account, then her creditors reached in and simply took everything that mom had. Now, the unfortunate part is that she also asked, well, how am I supposed to live with no money? So in other words, she was at zero. Because why? Because once if your bank account is garnished, everything is being taken. So these are the that was one danger. Another one is that if you put your kids on your house or on an investment account, you may miss the opportunity for a step up in tax basis. So in other words, a gift is taken so that if the house is sold later after you die, the kids are going to have to pay taxes on that. Well, why pay taxes on something that you don't have to pay taxes on? So you're giving an unknown tax because we haven't had a full discussion of how to do proper estate planning. When we bring kids on, it is usually an attempt to make things quote unquote easy, and it actually is not easier. It's a fallacy and it's a myth. It is better to sit down and do good estate planning because then we can cover your entire life properly.
Okay, some of the myths of estate planning this week on the Legacy and Faith Show. If you're intrigued by Paul's point of view on this subject and you'd like to know more information or get his services, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to legacyandfaith.com, past podcasts, ways to communicate with us, and upcoming educational opportunities so you can learn more. Head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, always great stuff. Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.